right, Exodus chapter 20, please.
Congregation, and then we have half of the, if Tom's going to move over there, we really have half. All right. We're going to read all three of these texts. I'm going to say this now and later, and I'm assuming you can understand this very easily. If you do not understand my preaching, it's probably because you live somewhat in a, and the best way to describe it is in a magic world. Look up here, folks. Many people, when it comes to personal problems, do not understand where they come from. Meaning, my husband and wife have problems. There must be some kind of a magical solution. Or, I don't know how this happened. I always approach things, in case you don't know, much more medically. So when I look at people's problems and you're having difficulties in marriage, it isn't dropping out of the sky and just magically appearing. It could be some gross sin on one person's part. But oftentimes in church, 90%, 95% of the time, it's not somebody sinning. So folks, we have spent, this is about the 10th or 11th sermon, I've dealt with a lot of things. Tonight is the second most important sermon I've preached. There's only one sermon you need to listen to again. Preached it on a Sunday morning, and it was entitled this, Peter's Last Command, Your First Priority. Grow in grace, because the moment you grow anywhere, you benefit everywhere. If you don't get that, you're wasting your time in church. Because all things being equal, marital problems are not secrets. I don't need Freud and Jung and Adler to come back to life to solve your marital problems. But there is one that's an ugly one. This will be the second most important thing I preach after the second Peter. It's going to be very light, it's going to be funny, but it's going to be very direct. So if you're struggling, and by the way, here's the bad thing. Most people in this room have fairly good marriages. There's only two or three people in this room that I know beyond any shadow of a doubt they've either learned this or need to. These two, and the only reason I point to them is because she's talked to us personally and publicly about the foolishness she grew up around, which impacts, oh yes. So Exodus 20. We'll look at first at verse 4. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the waters under the earth. But the real command comes up in verse 5. It's not that you have a picture of your mother in your wallet. It's this, thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. And then we have why. For I, the Lord God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth. And you notice in the King James, what's up here? It's in italics. The fourth point of the sermon, or the fifth point, is all revolving. Don't get bored around that italicized word. Look at me. I have no problem if it's in the text. But it's got to be in the, look at me, it must be in the text both places or neither place. Unfortunately, they only put it in the first half. Hello? You'll see. So, God says, I will visit the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third or fourth, and you could say something. Generations make sense. Of them that what? And showing mercy unto thousands, and then there's something not here. Thousands of what? Well, if you're going to put generations in the first, you got to put them in the second. Folks, you can't have a third and a fourth without saying a third and a fourth of what? Or a thousandth of a what? There's no what. So it's either just leave third and fourth, or in a thousand, or leave third and fourth generation and leave thousand generations. It's got to be that to even make sense in that thing you speak called English. All right, let's look, if you would,
Exodus 34. For you that have eyes to see tonight, you'll probably notice this happens over and over. 34, verse 5. One of the greatest texts in the Bible, because in some ways God is revealing himself. 34 and verse 5, Exodus. It's in the top of your notes. And the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The funny part is he doesn't say anything. The name of the Lord simply stands for who he is. And the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abundant in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for what? Of what? Forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, and that will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the children's children, unto the third and fourth. Do any of you notice the same thing? So you either have generations in both places or neither place. By the way, I think generations is what it means. I think God will judge families. How do I know this? I can name the names. Would you like me to? When I walked into this church in 1996, three young women, all involved in sin, of the ugliest variety. You say, you shouldn't say things. It ain't changed in 22 years. All three of them are still acting like fools. All three of them were in cahoots. Some of you are like, who are we talking about? By the way, folks, unless there's repentance, stuff doesn't change. Do you know this? Yes or no? Fools are still fools. Wow. Well, let's look on to Deuteronomy. I wish it wasn't the case, by the way. Deuteronomy. And that'll be chapter 5, which is the second giving of the Ten Commandments. Basically the same things with just a little bit of nuance, because now we're no longer in Egypt, leaving Egypt. Now we're about to enter the promised land. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 8. Thou shalt not make thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is earth beneath or that is in the waters beneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and the fourth something of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands. Yeah, you see, you're back to what? Of thousands of generations of them that love me and keep my commandments. This evening, I'm going to speak on the elephant in your marriage. And you'll know what it is. It's not a secret. Look at me. All things being equal, when you see the same problems over and over and over, it's got to be deep sin, or there's got to be something so deeply rooted in your life from the past that you're not willing to deal with it. Folks, it's like you got a sore throat. The doctor looks and he says, I think you swallowed your car. And you say, that's ridiculous. That's how most people think about people's lives. It's magical thinking. Until one day you step back and you realize this isn't magic. Now, I'm going to say this and pray. We've been standing a long time. The sermon you're going to hear tonight has taken me more time than the rest of the sermons combined on marriage. Got that? And if I really look at my life, it's been one of the number one topics of my thought in the last 22 years. Because when I walked in here, I saw the results of sin in families and the repercussions. And I still see the sin and the repercussions in those same families. Mm-hmm. Father, I ask your blessing and help tonight. Don't want this to be mean, because this is just a sobering subject. I desire instead, Father, that this would be something helpful. That's my prayer, and that's my goal, and that's what I want to accomplish, because in reality, all three of these texts are very, very positive. Help us to hear, we ask, in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. Cliffy, could you do me a favor? Leave your Bible there and just sit right here, just for the opening of the sermon. It's just the opening. You don't need to bring your Bible, just for the opening. I'm going to use you. You'll understand. I start the illustration in your notes.
He always dressed and acted like a white-collar executive. Meaning this, when he came to church in St. Louis, he always had a suit on, he had dress shoes on, he was very reserved, he was never underdressed, he always, when he walked in the back doors of that church, I thought he was an executive someplace. His wife was different. She was his polar opposite. At first, I was a young man. Look at me. I'm like most of you. Many people in this room and many people that you would talk to. When I was young, I thought behavior came from no place. By the way, stuff doesn't come from no place. There's a reason people continue to behave in certain ways. She was a little weird. Stand up here, Cliffy. One thing that was the weirdest was this, and by the way, I'm giving away state secrets. At the fellowship time, when she first came, she would do this. She'd walk right up to you. Are you comfortable in somebody's space that close? Especially a woman that's not your wife or your daughter or your mother. Stay away from me. And it was just like, so I started noticing something, and my wife can attest to this. I started noticing she'd come down an aisle and guys would turn around and go other aisles. Or what do you do when somebody gets too close in your space? You literally do something physical. Now, some of you are out there thinking, yeah, she's just different. That comes from a way of thinking that doesn't know the results of the past in a person's life. By the way, if I'm with Cliffy, I'm very comfortable touching him from the side. It's not personal, yes? From the back, don't do it. But from the front, most people, somewhere around 18 inches, that's about as close as we want. Is that right? It just gets a little creepy. It's like, no thank you. And when somebody gets up close in your face, that's really creepy. Now see, thank you, Cliffy, that's all I needed. Hey, wait till you see the fellowship time and men are turning around, half a dozen of them, to go a different direction. Everybody recognizes something's wrong. Well, in the church I pastored in St. Louis, for the first 2 or 3 years, we had 4 police officers there. And when I left there, we still had a couple guys had moved on to other locations and things. One of my police officers came to me a year or two later, and I didn't know this. He said, Pastor Warren, because by the way, I was still young, still naive. I still believe what you believed. If we have problems, we're just having problems. Problems don't come from the sky. When your children grow up to be worthless, that didn't come from the sky. When your marriage is having problems, it didn't just drop in. There's reasons why it's happening. Roy comes up to me. Now, Roy Teeter was a little bitty fella. Roy Teeter had the biggest hands I have ever, and I have big hands. His fingers were that much longer than mine. He was a massive guy. His hobby was deadlifting. Who does that? He was a monstrosity of a guy, gentle soul. He was a police officer there locally. He came to me and says, Pastor Warren, I'm having a problem. And I'm like, he says, I can't go over and see, I'll use a different name, the Smith family anymore. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, every week I'm getting called to their house because the husband and the wife are fighting. He said, today I went to their house, or that week, he said the wife was on top of the husband with a butcher knife. Did I tell you what he looked like when he walked into church? Looked like an executive, and she was weird. Oh, my goodness. You say, how did you help them? How do you help people like that? I can tell you the one person that who doesn't help them is me. Because all they do with me is the same thing that some of them did this morning. They get angry. I'm talking about loving God's people and the family, and they're getting angry because they know they don't love anybody. Well, they came to our church for a year or two, maybe 3. He was actually not a bad guy. I say in your notes, they finally drifted out of Lifegate Baptist Church and eventually out of marriage. It was an impossible situation. She had what are called boundary problems. What are boundary problems, folks? Boundaries are so natural. Nobody ever thinks of them unless you don't have them. Yes? You never think. You'd never get in somebody's personal space. She couldn't figure out where she ended and where somebody else began. And that's always a symptom of something horrific happened. No, before birth, she was a Mormon. Yes, in her childhood. Something horrific had happened in her childhood. Now, what was it? I didn't know at the time. I knew elements of it. I found out later it was the obvious. What would you guess, Debbie McGrail? Sexual molestation, of course. And by the way, people that have been sexually abused, do you not know this? The women do one or two things. They either run right up to you and you're like, or the extreme opposite. They come into church and they weigh about 400. And you think it's because they like potatoes. No, they're doing things to keep people at a distance. I told the story before, so I won't again. I work with a woman that specifically told me that. She had lots of male friends, gays. And she was round as a top. And she says, I've gained this weight because I don't want men anywhere close to me. That is, by the way, not that particular problem. The elephant in your marriage. It's the past. So here are my ideas this evening. And by the way, this sermon won't help you much or your family much if you fill in notes and go back to sleep. These are the kind of things you actually have conversations about, okay? With your spouse, with your children, with your family, with your friends. Everybody has a past. Would everybody agree with that? Well, if you're alive, you have somewhat of a past. I hope you know that. It's simply this. It's your life up till now. It's the people you come from, whoever those people are. Judy, you had friends here this morning. You do know, because I think I came across as compassionate this morning, she immediately told me her story. And it's a horrible story. Mm-hmm. By the way, when somebody gives me all this face stuff, you do realize you're not fooling anybody. There's reasons why we are what we are. Everybody has a past. I have one. You have one. It affects us differently. By the way, if you come from a family and you have four kids, when my family gets together, my two sisters and I, because my brother doesn't talk to any of the three of us, we have different childhoods. It's like, you sure your dad was my dad? Strange, isn't it? In your notes, it's the people you come from, it's the subculture and cultures you come from. I don't want to say anything more about that. Number two, it is a past that impacts the present. Yes? Folks, you come from someplace, and that's one of the factors that impacts where you are, who you are. In the notes, it talks about the third and fourth generation. There's some things that happened in your past that comes into your present. On the other hand, 1,000 generations. If you happen to be in this chain, there's some things that have happened that come into the present. So, it's important to know, and I'm going to make this entertaining in a moment, I hope. I'm not trying to be negative. This is, by the way, you all have a past. I do too. And it's not one thing, it's many things. You right? So I say that in your notes. This is not all of one thing. It can be good. And I think I have many good things in my past. How about you? By the way, I have many good things. It can be bad. Yes? It can be indifferent. What do I mean by indifferent? Everybody in this room have, most of your past is indifferent. Where you grew up. What kind of flowers you grew up smelling. You know, there's millions of indifferent, nothing. They don't affect us. Next. It could be very good. Such as this. Do you think there is a greater chance of you coming to faith if you grew up in a good Christian home? So I say in your notes, such as a good Christian home. Folks, do you understand that privilege? Wow! There's something much different about growing up in a Christian home, and all along, I've talked to Sister Pam, I've talked to my wife, and I've talked to Tim. We got a young man, I'm not going to say his name. I like the young man very much. If you girls want to tell him, I like the guy. He's one of the smarter kids in my Bible class, but whatever goes on at home comes out in school. And the kid is confused. By the way, a child shouldn't have to deal with that kind of nonsense when they're 15, 16, and 17. But families are dysfunctional, and in his case, it's not very good. It might be, I don't know how bad it is. It might be on the other side, very bad. I don't know. Next, it could be funny. There's a lot of funny things that happen in the past, aren't there? Next, there are those things which are peculiar, are unique, that makes you, you. And folks, that comes from your past too. So they're peculiar or unique that makes you, you. I was talking to my sister the last time we were home. And my sister always says, because my sister travels. She's been retired for quite a few years. And before that, did she go to Australia or where did she? And I said, Rita. Now, by the way, there's four of us. Rita's the oldest. Of the four children, there's exactly one child that likes cultures and eats everything. By the way, my children, on a day off, never, ever, ever went to McDonald's. We go to some ethnic restaurant because I want my kids introduced to everything under the sun. I want them to actually know where India is. I want them to know that Africa is not a country. I still got kids in my Bible class who think Africa is a country. It's like, anyhow. But my sister, she's a good person. By the way, if you go down to her house, and I recommend you do, for you that want to go to Springfield, she's lovely. But she grew up on chicken, potatoes, gravy, biscuits. And I said, Rita, if you go to Mexico, you know you're going to have to eat Mexican food. I'll never, just her face. I guess I won't go there. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Is that bad or good? Just funny. Or how about this? Her background, look at me. Filipinos, don't give my sister any trouble. You bring your family from the Philippines all the way to Chicago. What do they want to go? Little Quiapo? It's like they can eat Filipino food in the Philippines. What are you coming over here to eat Filipino food for? Indians come to America and go to an Indian restaurant. That's ridiculous. We're all that way, aren't we? Yes, so my sister, by the way, she's not going to Mexico. Because she said, oh, I don't know what that is. It's like, who cares what? I'm a simple person. If a Mexican can eat it, I can eat it. Now, I won't say that about a Filipino because they like fish head soup, and I'm not really can't go that far. Look in your notes. How about the three staples of life? Potatoes, pasta, and rice. Here's Pastor Warren, and I'm being honest. I think about all of this. I grew up, I lived on potatoes. I say this honestly, this is what I mean, Atong. On an average day, we had potatoes for breakfast, for lunch, and for supper. I would say that would, out of 7 days, that would be true six of them. Some kind of potatoes in the mornings, a different kind at lunch, and a different kind. We grew up on potatoes. What about pasta? This is just funny stuff. Well, pasta in our house, we ate it about one time every 2 weeks. But it wouldn't be pasta. You know, the kind that, the best pasta that was ever been made in this environment was Frank Pasolacqua. I'm sorry you didn't ever know him. Frank Pasolacqua could do some Italian spaghetti. Oh, my goodness. I never heard of that as a kid. When I think of pasta, I'm talking macaroni and cheese. Or we might do some kind of what they call goulash, which all it was macaroni and some ground beef thrown in. How about rice? Folks, please look at me. My older sister said it to me recently. We were discussing food, And you say, did you ever eat rice? And the answer is, and I'm going to give you to you what I wrote, and this is what my sister said. Well, we did have rice in pudding at school. And I probably ate that 3 or 4 times in the first 18 years of my life. I can honestly say to you, when I joined the Navy, went through the chow is the right term, went through the line, and I saw a thing of rice. I had never seen rice like that before. And I tried some, and I thought, who would want to eat this junk? Now, that's my life. Then we move on to my daughter-in-law. She is hilarious. She's Italian, and she has also eaten potatoes called French fries. Oh, and by the way, she's a good cook. She's a really smart, she likes to learn cooking. She likes that creativity. She did not know how to make mashed potatoes. Honestly, folks, I didn't know a person could be alive without making mashed potatoes. And she did not have, is that right, Jenny? She didn't have a clue. Mashed potatoes. Oh, my goodness. How about pasta? She lived on pasta. She still lives on pasta. She, and by the way, if you go to her house with John and Tiffany, look at me. You got to be careful. Because I'm from the rural area. We would have biscuits and gravy, potatoes and gravy. She'll have pasta and gravy. But it ain't the kind of gravy you're thinking about. It's like other stuff that they make in Italian circles. It's like, that ain't gravy. Gravy has to have grease in it. There's no grease in this stuff. She lived on pasta. How about rice? Well, I think she ate rice semi-frequently, occasionally. Then there's my buddy Dada. Dada, when it comes to potatoes, he heard of potatoes before he came here. Let me ask you, Dada, had you ever had, outside of French fries, potatoes? You had, but usually in the Philippines, there are these things here. Look at this, folks. This is a potato. If somebody fed me one of those, I'd throw it at them. Because that's the only kind they have there are just about that. Potatoes are expensive in the Philippines. So Dada had eaten French fries at, oh, you say, what about pasta? Well, he'd eaten French fries at, what's the name of the place? Jollibee. And he'd eaten pasta. Sweet spaghetti. Is that correct? With banana ketchup. Every time I go to the Philippines, somebody wants to take me to Jollibee, and I say, listen, I'll go any place but Jollibee. No Jollibee. I don't want sweet spaghetti, and I definitely don't want to reach for some tomato, you know, some sauce, and it comes out banana? How about rice? Dada, how often did you have rice? He lived on rice. Now, look at me, everybody. Why did I tell you that story? Don't look at me in the face and act like a fool. People's problems don't come from the sky. Plus, people's good parts don't come. Everything comes from the language you speak, the food you eat. Everything comes from someplace. Yes? I think it's funny. I think it's interesting. In your notes, I think it was it Socrates or Plato said the unexamined life is not worth living. The problem is when the past impacts us in a negative or extremely negative way. Folks, I don't have it written. You can draw it or write it. Everybody knows this. If you grew up in a dysfunctional family, you tend to do one of two things. You either repeat it or you react. You know this, don't you? So you see people that grew up in certain bad dysfunctional homes, they either do exactly what they grew up around or they do its exact opposite. The problem is the opposite of dysfunctional, but you can never tell a dysfunctional person this because they get angry at you. My friend, not everybody in this room has major marital problems. Some do. Usually it comes from childhood. Things are dysfunctional, messed up. And here, look at me, friend, and you don't even know you're carrying it into the marriage. We're going to get, now everything so far has been fun. It won't be fun after this. I'm sorry. Number three, some of us, and maybe most to some degree, have a past that is not past, but present. That's the text that talks about visiting the iniquity and showing mercy. You see, friend, showing mercy and visiting the iniquity means whatever happened in the past, if it was good, that's coming right into the present. If it was bad, that's coming right into the present. You tend to bring the past with you. And some of us, and maybe all of us to some degree, have a past that is not past, but it is present. Hence, the elephant in your marriage. Let me give you some of those. Bonding boundary issues. Bonding boundary issues. This can take on many forms, especially in the extremes. Even within the marital bond, you can have people who either have no boundaries at all. Now, everyone, I know this for 10 minutes, this is going to be some of the most unpleasant things if you have a mind to hear that I'll ever say as a pastor. Somebody's got to speak truth. If you grew up in a dysfunctional home, you have problems with bonding and boundaries. And all boundaries, and all that is I know where I end and you begin. First thing I notice in a family, if they have these problems with boundaries, is, what's it called? Enmeshment. Mama burps, the rest of the family burps. Billy had problems at school, the whole family's crying. Daddy stubs his toe, the whole family stays home and cries. That is a family that doesn't have proper boundaries. Where does it come from? It can come from many, many places, but it's very easy to see. By the way, there's four of us in my family. There's my wife, there's me, there's my daughter, and my son. If my son stubs his toe, he doesn't even talk to me about his toe. Why would he talk to me about his toe? If he's upset, somebody hurt my feelings. If he comes to me, I'm going to say, grow up. But if you have boundary problems, oh, Junior, somebody's picking on you. And this is what you find. Whoever the center of the family is around, whoever's emotions, that person's emotions is everybody's emotions. It doesn't get more painful if you're listening. We have it in the school. Somebody will have, we have it in families in this church, and it's so obvious, but I'm not trying to talk about people. I'm trying to get you to understand. One of the elephants is if you have a boundary problem, you'll know it because whoever the center of the emotions is, that's everybody's emotions. So if I'm upset, everybody's upset. By the way, if I'm upset, my wife doesn't even know I'm upset about something. Why would I share every little feeling I have with my wife? Somebody made me upset. Grow up. Wait a minute. But you can't grow up if you don't have proper boundaries and bonding. You share. Are you listening? You share. And you share everything, even with little children. Little children in first, second, and third grade will come in here with burdens from their parents, talking about mama's angst. Oh, my goodness. We continue. Shame or the lack of shame. And this comes from many. I'm not going to tell you where this comes from because, folks, I can't tell you. I don't know everybody's personal problems. But I do know this. Shame, having too much shame or having no shame. I've said it publicly. If a person says to you, I don't have a problem with guilt and shame, they have said they're a sociopath, a criminal. Because normal people feel guilty about certain things if they've done wrong. Yes? If you, by the way, it's the extremes. You're always feeling shamed or you have no shame. Boy, that's a sign that something's rotten someplace. Now, I'm going to get to the solution later. You say, do you ever see that here? Yes, I see it here with one person that's no longer here. I liked them, liked the husband a lot. Every time I saw the wife pulling and yanking and covering, because she didn't want anybody real close to her. And she made it through here about 3 years without anybody really getting close to her. Wow! Here's the problem. She's already on to the next church. Same problems, same conditions, same misery. Nothing has changed. Still has the elephant. And it just goes on. And oh, by the way, what kind of a parent do those become? So not only is the curse that where she came from passed on to her, she carefully passes it on to her children. It's usually a she in this case, but not always. By the way, shame or the lack of shame is noticed by covering, extremely high walls, drugs, alcohol, anything like that. It's both sometimes the cause of it and the way you're trying to cover. How about this one? Personal secrets, often unspeakable. And I'm not referring to sins. My friend, if you have some secrets, one of the things I know when a person, and by the way, lots of people do, and I mean they have done things that they don't want anybody to know. Here, I'm going to say it in a minute. Here's the problem. You're trying to hide to such a degree that anybody with eyes knows what you're doing. That isn't the problem. The problem is it takes so much emotional energy to suppress secrets. Bring your stinking little secret to the Lord. Confess your dirty little secrets. By His grace and through His grace, find some healing. Don't try to suppress dirty little secrets. Because you're going to be like an emotional powder keg all the time. You're always an emotional wreck. Well, of course, because it takes a lot of emotional energy to. So you did something with your boyfriend or your whatever before marriage. Okay, you're the first one. I'm not making light, but you go to God and get it fixed. Don't keep suppressing your secrets. Next, family secrets. Family secrets. Did I? Yeah, I got that one. Family secrets. His last name began with the letters K-N. K-N. If your name begins with K-N, you're Germanic. The name, anyhow. There's lots of K-Ns. Knoth, Knapp. I mean, there's bunches. It's a Germanic name. He grew up in a home where he knew, even as a kid, something was wrong. And look at me, he could sense the emotions of something, but you're a kid. As he grew up, he would, by the way, normally children ask their parents whether they think of it or not. You know, when your mom and dad are eating and you're eating, you want to find out the family story. How did you meet? What did you do? When did you get together? And by the way, the best family story here is Cliffy and Judy's. Cliffy is a totally trapped Judy into this marriage, 100%. But by the way, they're fun stories. His story was this. This young man's dad said, I don't know anything about my family. I never met my father. So this young man grew up in a home where his dad said he never met his father. Yes? This young man grew up. If you have a name that begins with a K-N, there aren't 100 million of them. This isn't like the name Smith. So he did some research. He found a picture of his grandfather's funeral. And guess what? His father was a pallbearer at the funeral. And it lied to his son his whole lifetime. Why? It was a secret. His father had committed suicide and maybe murdered somebody. I can't remember. And the family decided to do what? Suppress that information. Do you know how much energy that takes? Look at me. You find this out where families grew up with daddy is a whoremonger and mama's a nervous wreck and mama tries to cover it up and the children grow up a nervous wreck and everybody's wondering, why is she a mess? Somebody was covering up stupid. By the way, emotions have a way of really scarring us. Don't have to. Well, we move on. I wish I could name the name, that, and he wouldn't be offended, but I'd have to ask him before I name this name. I learned this story 15 years ago from someone that used to come to this church when I first got here. I call these next ones dark secrets. And boy, dark secrets are even worse than the worst family secret. And the dark secret was this. This man told me this. He said, my grandfather had sex with every daughter he had and every granddaughter he had. Two generations. Look at me. And when they finally confronted him, he laughed. He said, I was just breaking them in. Look at me. Here's the problem. Hey, that secret is so dark and so ugly. By the way, and how many people were in that conspiracy? Where were the little weeny males that were married to these women? Listen, you do that around here, you're going to go to the police after we beat you to death. He was doing this, and the males knew. And it was such a secret that every woman in his family was a mess. Isn't that shocking? Okay. So you have shame, the lack of shame. You have personal secrets. And by the way, if you find people that can continually go back to the same place and they're always hateful, they're probably unsaved and they probably have some personal secrets they're hiding. They don't want you to know. I've talked about family secrets, dark secrets, and of course, enmeshment. I've already told you about enmeshment. It's when one person has a tummy ache and the whole family has a tummy ache. Turn the page in your notes, but don't miss the point. Folks, it is not normal when one person in the family stubs their toe that the whole family cries. That's not normal. In your notes, typically, how do I say this? Where did I say this? Oh, I have it on that next back page here. Typically, in these cases, you get what you call overshare. Do you know when people are sharing more information than you want to get? That's what overshare is. I've already said this, but one person has a tummy ache and everyone else has a tummy ache. Look at me, friend. If I have a bad day, my wife doesn't know it, my daughter doesn't know it, and my son doesn't know it, and the only person that's going to know it, unless they need to know something, is me and God. Some of you, I don't smile at you. You go home, you tell your husband, your wife, your children, your cousins, that's called enmeshment. You don't know how to deal with problems. Secret, in your notes, does not equal private. I believe that everyone ought to have many things private. I believe every child ought to grow up in a home where their body is private. And the only people that can see their body would be mom and dad, as mom and dad needs to see their body. And after a certain point, I don't think dad needs to see the daughter's body or mom needs to see the boy's body. I believe in being private, but that's not a secret. Hey, that's not something you're trying to cover up. Oh, did you know my dad? You need to go to the Lord and spend time with God in His Word. Otherwise, this junk drags around with you. Next, things were never discussed, hidden, secret, confusing. And my favorite, this is one of the ways you know you have an elephant. Your story keeps changing. No, I can't go any further on that. I say in your notes, remember it takes a great deal of emotional energy to keep dark secrets. It takes a great deal. You say, Pastor Warren, folks, please look at me. I believe why you see generation after generation after generation is three or four generations ago, something ugly was done, some deep sin. Maybe a father left the family. Maybe the mother wasn't so hot either. And these sins, they come into the next generation. Look at me. Nobody's dealt with them. Nobody can speak truth about them. Nobody can tell the truth about them. They got this secret. But that takes all these emotions. Now look at me. By the time you get to the third generation, are you listening? They don't even know what the problem is. All they get is the emotions. They get the angst. And here you are, from the grandparents to you, to your children, you just pass it along and say, here it is. And they grew up with all of these emotions and they don't even know where they come from. Wow. All because of some junk done in the past. Obviously, another area this shows up in is decision making. If you have grown up in a dysfunctional home, you either tend to one or two directions. Either you cannot make a decision, or, and you only have, by the way, it's a toggle switch. You know what a toggle switch is. Either you can't make a decision, or you got to make every decision. There's nothing in between. And oh my goodness, that's one of the great symptoms of something is not right here. Why do you either have to make every decision or no decision? And you'll also find as a symptom of this, I say in your notes, they rarely feel in control. That's the reason they have to try to control everything else. Another issue is they tend to be stuck. And they can find no cause or reason for it. They're just stuck. My goodness. Hey, look at me. I preached probably 40 to 50 sermons on forgiveness, only to have some people not forgive. Why? Something happened someplace that's rotten, and they're stuck. And there's nothing uglier than a Christian who's stuck. By the way, it's cute. You know, I've had contact with this church since 1977. When I wasn't here, I'd call up Jim Dewar. I remember talking to Jim, and I would just, we would, you know, not in a gossip way. There were people that were my friends, and I'd say, how's Frank and Kathy doing? How's so-and-so doing? And always I would ask about a couple families. How are they doing? And Jim would say, about the same. I want to ask you a question. Should you be doing about the same 22 years later? Shouldn't, by the grace of God, God change something in your life? Not if there's some stuff going on back there. By the way, all of us have a past. Sometimes that past is not past, it's present. It's intruding into right now. We have to move. Next, habits or behavior that is inexplicable or unexplainable. Anytime you just can't even figure out why you keep doing this over and over and over and over, my guess is the elephant is the past. Well, let me lighten this up a little bit. Everybody knows this story, but you have to laugh because it is a funny story. It was Thanksgiving, and the daughter wanted to make ham for Thanksgiving. She didn't know how to make ham. So, if you don't know how to make ham, what do? Call mom. So she called her mom, and her mom gave her the directions, and she said the first thing you do is once you get your ham thawed out, cut off the bottom third, put that back in the freezer, and then she went through the process. So she cooked the ham. The ham was pretty good. At the end of the time, she called her mom back and said, Mom, what do I do with the other third of the ham? And she's looking for some kind of profound, you know, maybe you use the other third of the ham to give to the poor. Or maybe you use the other third of the ham to make beans and cornbread and potatoes. Or, you know, she didn't know. So she calls her mom. And by the way, if this wasn't so true, she calls her mom and says, Mom, why do we cut off the bottom third of the ham? And the mom says, I don't know. My mother, that's how she taught me to cook ham. The mother's still alive. The grandmother is. So the daughter, which called the mother called her mother, the grandmother, and said, Grandma, Mom, why did you cut off the bottom third of the ham? And the mom, I cut off the bottom third of the ham because the dish that I had would only hold two-thirds of the ham. And we're now doing this for the third generation. Hey, look at me. Why do I see foolishness in families? Second and third generation. I'm asking you a question. Something is rotten. Now, it's funny, but then it isn't funny. Because we're passing, oftentimes, look at me, sometimes we're literally passing on to our children and grandchildren, we're not even passing on the problem. We're just passing on the emotions. And they bring them right to school, and you see this kid that's an emotional wreck, and the kid doesn't know why. Tragic. Now we come to the solution. And I wish I had a solution. I have said three things. Everyone has a past. Does everyone agree with that so far? A past that impacts the present. Do you agree with that? Some of us, and maybe most of us to some degree, have a past that is not past but is present. Number four, a past that must be confronted where? Look at me, friend. If anything I said tonight you see showing up in your home, you know, when Junior stubs his toe, the whole family cries, anything. You know one thing, when you walk out the door, something happened in the past you need to get hold of. Now, I don't have a formula. I don't have a trick. I don't have some medicine. I can't give you a Z-Pack. I can give you a long-term process that I promise you will help you. I've already said this. As a young man in my 20s, I read James Dobson's book on Dare to Discipline. It helped me understand my father. It helped me more about that than it did the child rearing. Now it helps me more for child rearing. Friend, I didn't grow up in a perfect home. I grew up with a violent father. Do you understand violence? We have a couple here that are violent until your son breaks your neck. You do understand, I grew up around violence. I think the World War II generation tended to be that way, frankly. At least all the dads that I knew and all my friends had fathers that had fought in the war, came home and went back to work and never dealt with what? We probably aren't meant to kill people when you're 17 or 16 or 18. My dad was very violent. I never was spanked a day in my life. I was beaten. And when I said beaten, I mean beaten. And what happens as a boy gets older when he's been beaten by his father? It grows into him, I'm going to beat the old man. I had many friends that did. Many friends that did. And if you have violence in your family, you better start asking why the only thing you can do when it comes to discipline is run your mouth, yell, and hit. Dobson's book helped me deal with the past, you understand? And I started to recognize, oh my goodness, I had anger problems, came directly from my father in response to Dad. Now, am I perfect? Well, I'm not. But embarrassingly, my son has none of the anger problems that I have. You get in my face, I'm going to hit you now. My son doesn't have that. Some of that's my wife, and some of that is I've learned to deal with some things. But may I say this? I hear anger out of people's mouths towards their little children. As a man in this church, and I'm going to say it publicly again, sitting in church service, said this. I was sitting in a chair, and behind me was a family, and the little daughter came up to hug the mother, and the mother said, "Don't you touch me!" I don't think that might be Christian. What do you think? Meaning, I don't even think a Christian could say that to their daughter. First of all, who would want to? But yet, friend, I've dealt with people in this church and through this church for many years. How about a woman that her dad every day called the daughter smelly and hairy? Let me ask you, when you get married, do you think she's going to feel feminine? She carries that filth. By the way, what does she do with that filth? She passes that filth on. And you start having generation after generation after generation. In your notes, it's a past that must be confronted in the present. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And of His fullness have all we received. And grace, it's charin, anti, charitas. It's grace on top of grace, on top of grace, on top of grace. This isn't something I had grace to get saved. It's grace that transforms. And if it doesn't, you didn't get the beginning. A The problem is we're so wrapped up in getting saved that our lives are worse than pagans. Unbelievable.
It's grace on top of grace. And then he illustrates. He says the law was given. By the way, that's a grace gift by Moses. Grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. John 8. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall keep you right where you were. 22 years later, you're still the same. Still anger, still lazy, still not working, still got bitter, still hate everybody. By the way, folks, what's wrong here? You don't know the truth, because the truth shall set you. And by the way, look at me. Over a period of 10 years, everybody in this room ought to see they have moved farther. Not 10 minutes, not 5 minutes, not a week. But there's this gradual process. You look back and think, wow, I've come a long way. God's brought me a long way. He does that through truth. Let's continue. John 17. Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. One of the most important verses ever on the subject we're discussing. Talking about who abides with God. He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness. And this next statement is life game changing. Speaketh the truth in his heart. John says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Acts 20, verse 32 says, Paul, speaking to the elders at Ephesus, says, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace. Hebrews 4, 16, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace. 1 Peter 5 says, but the God of all grace. Under that, I say this, surrender, dedication, higher life, deeper life, exchange life will not touch these. Friends, I don't want to pick on anybody. It breaks my heart. The only thing I don't like about pastoring is you have people that never get anything. I don't get it. I remember talking to a woman about that she needed to move on in life, and she would just, and she said to me, but I surrendered. I guess that was her out. What does surrender have to do with anything? But she still has all the bitterness, the anger, the angst, the emotions. Folks, look at me. There's a conference. If you want to go, I'll pay your way. It's across the border in Wisconsin. You can go learn about the higher life. You can learn about living above sin. Good luck. There's a way God changes us. It's the same for everybody. It's in your notes. I say this. This will contain all of the following, ongoing and often. It will contain, first of all, the truth and grace of Christ. Next, knowing and obeying the truth. Friend, going to a conference and being delivered doesn't deliver anything. The truth shall set you free. Next, it probably is going to have something to do with reading and or hearing the truth. Next, telling the truth. I think the thing, now everybody look at me, I'll explain that all in a minute. Look up here. Everybody knows I pick on certain people, is that correct? Pick on Frenchie about two things primarily. Number one is age, because we know. And secondly, anytime there's a problem with the notes, and we already passed the problem with the notes, didn't we? Yes, a pass that mucked. I was hoping you didn't notice that. I printed up all these notes, and I looked on the backside, and I said, Jan, you let me do this. And she didn't have anything to do with it. By the way, I pick on Louis. You say, why? I like Louis. Pick on Atong. Why? Like Atong. But I always pick on Debbie McGrail. Usually not nice. Now, why do I do that? I enjoy it. Don't feel sorry for her. She gives it back more and more, not always publicly. She's much crueler than me. But listen to me, friend. See, Tim knows. Debbie McGrail, at times, she's not an oversharer, but there's been times her family was pretty messed up. Would that be... And you grew up probably thinking your dad was messed up and your mom was okay. And then when you got a little older, you start realizing
They're both messed up. May I say something, friend? Look at me. This is how I know you're going someplace. The moment you can speak the truth. And I'm not talking about in the court of law. Debbie can tell you the truth about her mother's bitterness, anger, what else? Hated all men, pretty much. That doesn't affect you, though, does it? Hey, look at me. You're keeping the secret of your dad or mom's immorality. Why? Why? You're keeping your own secrets. By the way, I don't want you to come to church and share. I don't want to do that. Please look at me. Psalm 15, look at the text. Look at the text. Psalm 15 says what? He that walketh uprightly, worketh righteousness, and speaketh the truth where? So please look at what I have in your notes. I believe a person that's going to move, over time, you're going to be exposed to the truth and grace of Christ. You're going to be exposed to knowing and obeying the truth, reading and hearing the truth, telling the truth, first of all, to yourself. I think, by the way, if I could summarize everything I've said tonight, friend, if you can't tell the truth to yourself, you can't move forward. Because at the core of your being, you're lying. If you can't look at your family you grew up in and speak the truth, you're stuck. So when you're helping people with marriage, you better quit playing religious games. Let's go to a conference and feel religious for a week. Because the problem ain't religion. The problem is you got lying going on. But you don't have to come here and, oh, let me give my testimony. Oh, I don't want to hear it. You must tell the truth, first of all, to yourself. And I probably have it in there. And probably about the same time to whom else? God. By the way, most truth-telling needs to be between you and God. Now, sometimes you need to speak the truth to other people. I think I have it in here. It's telling the truth to yourself, to God, and to another. P-R-N. Pro-re-nata. Sarah, what's P-R-N mean? Have you learned that yet? What does it mean? As needed. By the way, healthy people, look at me, friend. Healthy people don't walk into a room, walk up to Tim, and say, I just want you to know I'm a survivor of incest. You haven't survived anything. You're a mess. Oh, but they are able to speak truth to God and to themselves. And PRN, pro re nata, that's hospital speak. As needed, or as the situation suggests, they're able to talk to the people they need to talk to. If you cannot do that, you have not moved one quarter of an inch in your Christian life. Truth. By the way, truth is the center of Christianity. By the way, I'm sorry, this sermon is going to last an hour, at least. And I hate lying among the same Christians. So this is what you'll generally hear. The father was a child abuser, and the daughter says, oh, he wasn't too bad. What part of too bad are we discussing? Speak the truth to God, to yourself, and others, PRN, as the situation shows the need. Not to everybody. It's not overshare. Can I ask you a question? Do you have a question on that? You want to go someplace and you can't talk the truth about where you came from, you're not going anyplace. And all of us have a family. And all of us grew up around some dysfunction, some of us a lot. Next. I think probably the word of his grace, Acts 20, 32. You say, how much time do I have to do this? Until you die. How about this? The throne of grace. How about this? The God of all grace. Now, please look at me. I want to summarize by making... I'm not even going to read the fifth point. Look at me. I'm going to summarize this. Here, there is some good news. Debbie always jokes, and I don't know if it's true, but it probably is true. You know, people want to get their genealogy done because they're related to some king. And Debbie says if she got her genealogy, that her family would be horse thieves and criminals. By the way, somebody has to come from those, don't they? My friend, here's the good news. Are you ready for the good news? Yes or no? Here's the good news. According to the text we read, God will judge up to 3 to 4 generations. But he will bless up to 1,000. Do you get the wink, wink? Yes, the sins of your fathers might affect you. But 1,000 to 4, God would rather bless your family. Look at me. People as secret keepers, suppressing, never wanting to tell the truth. Why? You keep God's curse on your family. Repent. Look at me. Come to the truth. Speak the truth. Come to the throne of grace. Read the word of his grace. Experience the God of all grace. I'm not saying you're going to get over your problems in 5 minutes, but my friends, if you come from bad situations, over time, you'll be shocked at what God does. Here it is. Are you ready? Because God, 1,000 times, would rather bless you. It's 1,000 to 3 or 4. You like those odds? I think God is a God of mercy, and he wants to show mercy to you. Look at me, and I'm done. But there will be no mercy until the truth arrives. If you can't tell the truth, you can't ask for forgiveness, you can't deal with this, 10 years from now, you'll be the same person. Same angst, same problems, because there's an elephant in your life, and you're feeding the elephant. Father, thank you for this night. A lot.